And we are now live.
Great. Good evening, everyone. My name is Carl Ye. I'm the chair for the LTD board. I'd like to go ahead and call this LTD board of directors regular meeting to order on Wednesday, July 15th, 2020. We're having our meeting online as to be in line with our governor's orders. I just want to make some quick comments. Let's do roll call first. So we'll start. Kate Reed is actually not able to be present today. Next, I have Josh Scove.
I am here.
Don Norden.
Here.
Caitlin Vargas.
Here.
And it does not appear that Stephen nor Emily are here today, but they may join us later as we progress along. Some of my comments that I wanted to make, I just want to say that at last week's special meeting, I made a statement about the abhorrent anti-Black vandalism of a marker honoring Sam and Maddie Reynolds at the West 11th Avenue MX station that was actually named after Sam. They were two Eugene Black Americans who championed civil rights and fought discrimination. I want to mention this at this regular board meeting for those who were not present last week, but rather than repeating the statement that actually many board members agreed with, I wanted to let you know that more work will be done by LTD to understand and further its role with racial equity in the coming months. I also want to mention that today's consent calendar contains minutes from past special board meetings, the weekly ones we've been having. In the near future, our meetings will actually be posting the agenda of our meetings with links to video recordings to their corresponding agenda items. That way, involved community members can watch the entire meeting or just choose the ones that interest them. And finally, we do actually have a very ambitious meeting agenda today, so I will be brisk in moving things along. So I am hoping my fellow board members will help in kind of helping with that, because we do have a lot to cover. And while we want to be meaningful, we want to make sure that we actually complete it. So that ends my comments for today. Next, any comments from you, AJ, as general manager?
I do, and I don't, it's not as meaningful, but maybe just smaller. I know at a previous board meeting, board members questioned about putting up documents up and not being able to see each other. I did want to point out that there's a feature on Zoom, if you get your mouse or your finger, if it's touchscreen, and you almost get around where the pictures are, you can actually just drag and see everybody and minimize the what we have posted. So right now I can see you guys all, and then if I move my mouse back to the right, you're able to see that. And that way board members can follow along. And I thought that was just something that would help the agenda, because I know unless you have multiple screens, you're trying to see what the agenda is and then you want to see each other. So talking, you can just use your mouse along, and we can have future training. But since we do have a lot today, I did want to make sure that board members who wanted to be face-to-face or Zoom-to-Zoom, whatever it is, and do that, yet have the agenda as a quick reference. So sorry for that. I think it was just important for you guys to, for today's agenda as you move it along.
Great, thank you very much, AJ. That's very helpful. Let's move on to announcements and additions to the agenda. So asking my fellow board, any announcements or additions? Okay, seeing none, let's move to board calendar. AJ, do you have any board calendar updates for us?
Everything is in your written material, all usual committees. We are resuming the SPC, which we did, and we will also hold. We're in the process of scheduling a comprehensive, accessible transportation services committee, but we don't have a date. So everything else on your packet is just your routine meetings, nothing new.
Thank you. And next we have on our agenda, audience participation. Thank you for the members of the public who are attending. It's not mandatory that you speak, but this is the opportunity to do so. I won't read the instructions for public comment unless there are actually people. If you would like to provide testimony, please use the raise your hand button or press star 9 on your phone to raise your hand. So if you're on a phone, press star 9. If you're on a computer, press the raise your hand button. And so, oh, I see one. So I'm going to go ahead and read the instructions then. So when it's your turn, or sorry, your time to speak, your name will be called. For those attending via phone only, the last 4 digits of your phone number will be called. Please state your name, city of residence, and who you are representing for the audio record. And once you have provided testimony, your hand will be lowered. Please do not raise your hand again. Only one opportunity to speak is provided. And for those unable or wanting to speak, not wanting to speak publicly, testimony may be provided via email at clerk@ltd.org. And that email address is just clerk@ltd.org. Finally, public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per community member. A timer will be displayed on the screen. There's no advance warning, so you just have to keep an eye on it or keep your own time. And because once it beeps, your 3 minutes are up, then we will move on to the next speaker or agenda item. So with that, it looks like we have at least one person who'd like to speak publicly, and I'm gonna let Camille moderate that since she can control those functions. Go ahead.
So there was one hand raised and that hand is now lowered. I didn't catch who it was. Is there anyone still wishing to speak? Please go ahead and raise your hand.
We'll go ahead.
I have no hand, Carl.
Okay.
Okay. Well, then,
good job, public, for testing whether the raise your hand function worked. So that worked out great. So, okay. So we'll go ahead and move on then. Thank you very much. And again, we do appreciate comments from the public, and thank you. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to board member reports. One thing before we get too far into that, I wanted to check if in the audience if Leah Rausch was in the audience. Camille, is she out there?
She is not, and I actually received an email that she will not be able to make
okay.
it. It looks like Mary Ann Nolte just raised her hand.
Well, Mary Ann, would you be able to, well, we'll find out. While Camille gets her online, I just wanted to say that the reason I was asking is because Leah Rausch is the new chair for our strategic planning committee and was elected chair. And I just want to congratulate her. And she was going to give us an SBC update, but Mary Ann was actually elected as the vice chair and may possibly give us an update too. So if she's available.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, Leah is unable. She's on her way back, but she's running a little bit late. So she asked if I would do the SBC update. So what I just wanted to say really briefly was that SBC, as you mentioned before, Carl has, or AJ mentioned this, SBC met again in July after taking kind of a break. And what we talked about was really diving into the strategic business planning process. So SBC is going to be discussing a lot of the issues related to LTD's new strategic business plan, and we'll be bringing the content of our discussion and any recommendations that we have, we'll bring those to the board at this meeting each month. So thank you very much for taking the time to hear what we've been talking about, and hopefully those discussions are useful to the board as you're making these decisions. And then just a heads up for our August meeting, what is on the agenda is to reboot a conversation about transit tomorrow. That was sort of put on the back burner, it seems like, because of COVID-19, which makes total sense. But next month, we want to talk about how transit tomorrow might get rolled out in the future, whether we stick with kind of that 85% model that you all had agreed upon, or whether it makes sense to do something different. So that will be the meat of the conversation for August. And then we also plan to spend a little bit of time talking about the why statement that gets to that strategic business plan. So that's the plan for the next several months, and then August in particular. And like I said, thank you for allowing us to have this time to explain what we've been working on, and hopefully that's useful to all of you.
Thank you very much, Mary Ann. That was Mary Ann Nolte, and she's the new vice chair for the SBC. I just want to say really quickly, we really do value the SBC and their unique position to give us direct input from a wide variety of areas. And so it's a really helpful group to the main board. So thanks again, Mary Ann, and we'll go ahead and move on to other board member reports. There are One's written down, but if there was any additional information that other board members want to provide, just go ahead and indicate and I will call on you. Is that you, Don, indicating?
Hi.
Go ahead.
To highlight, it was part of the Plain Act about the ODOT pilot projects. And I feel like there's an opportunity. The Lane Act was in that discussion. I felt like people were kind of drifting around and kind of searching for an opportunity to participate in that. And I thought here was an opportunity that we could focus more on the Area Commission on Transportation for public transportation. It just seemed to me that there was a opportunity there, and I wanted to highlight that. It's in the notes as well, but that's what I want to bring up now. I don't have any specific plans for that, but there is a steering committee meeting on Friday. If anyone wants to participate in that, you can certainly provide information. I'm sure Camille would have that.
Okay, thanks.
Don, this is Josh. Can you just clarify what, sorry, Carl, I was just gonna ask for clarification. Is this something that where LTD would engage with other people who are part of Lane Act, or you said it was an ODOT project? What exactly is the opportunity?
Well, Lane Act is looking for a committee of people to be involved in that. Beyond their steering committee, they're looking for other people who would volunteer to be on that steering committee. I did volunteer for that. I'm not sure exactly what the role is, and I had a feeling that there were three or four others. I mean, like Rob Zako did, and I think the mayor of Vanita. It was just kind of looking for things there, and it didn't seem to gel, and most of the people in the meeting weren't responding to it. I thought, well, okay. ODOT's, there's only two acts in the state where ODOT's allowing this pilot project to go. The other is up in the northeast corner. So the Lane Act is really an experiment from ODOT to see, okay, what do you acts want to do? What do the area commissions on transportation want to do? It's kind of, in one way, throwing us a bone. And it's okay, we still have to organize or understand what this particular area commission on transportation wants to do with ODOT's pilot project. So that's where I was feeling like, okay, here's a chance for those who are interested to be involved and perhaps direct this and maybe bring some funds into, you know, at least Lane County in transportation actions. I don't know if that clarifies or not, but that's where I was seeing it.
Thanks, Don. Oh, do you have a follow-up question, Josh?
I guess, Mike, I was going to ask a question about what happened at the MPC at the last meeting. I know Kate's not here, but I think you were there as well, Carl. I had some questions about that I think maybe dovetail with what Don was saying, but I'll wait for the appropriate moment. I don't know if that's right now.
Oh, well, just to finish off what Don was talking about, I think perhaps we can incorporate that into a work session where we have more information about the Lane Act, and because I think that's probably going to take a little bit more time. But thanks for the update, Don. And then Josh, you were asking about the MPC.
Yeah. So I just noticed some discussion of the MPC, and then we also got an email from Best. I just wanted to make sure that since we just passed a climate policy that includes coordinating with partner jurisdictions on land use, that message was coming through loud and clear at the MPC, because from the notes, it didn't seem like that had happened. I don't know if you want to talk about that in a future meeting or if we talk about it now, but like, I just want to make sure that if people, you know, who are observers here are tracking, you know, our work on climate, when it comes to land use, you know, that's really working with partner jurisdictions. It's not us.
I mean, I feel like it was understood there, and perhaps it was not as vigorous just because it had been discussed. It's been going on for several meetings. And so, but yeah, maybe we could get more detail. Actually, AJ was, I don't know, AJ, did you have a comment or quick comment about that one too?
No, sorry, I was just moving along. I was actually not at MPC, but I'm...
Oh, you're right, you weren't there.
Yes, but I did read through the material. Yeah. No, I did read through the board packet and or the material for MPC and saw that Paul Thompson did send us the information on public testimony. So I was not sure what the conversation was amongst the different members, but if I, based on the briefing that Tom gave me, was that a few people commented, but there was no formal action taken or request to bring back the topic in a way, but I'm sure there's lots happening behind the scenes.
Okay, well then I guess that I would just say, and this relates to sort of our future work planning, I think we, now that we have that policy in place, for it to mean something, I think we really need to be working through MPC and with partner jurisdictions individually to make sure that, like, we are providing that voice so they know what sorts of land use decisions by them, especially by the cities, will make transit most successful. Because I think that's, I mean, the reason that's in the policy was that we had discussed at the at the ad hoc sustainability committee level, but also at the board level, about how we have not been sufficiently, you know, kind of clear and forceful with the cities that they need to make land use decisions that are complementary with transit. So I just want to make sure that's out there, but I think we need to maybe go back and turn the policy into a little bit more of a strategy to work with people on. So I can leave it there for now.
Okay. Well, thanks, Josh. I think, yeah, maybe this is a good window indication that we should have maybe more discussion about it. And we'll maybe incorporate that into the aforementioned work session I just referred to. So we'll figure that out. Thanks. And sorry, AJ, I totally forgot. You had designated Tom to be your replacement, to stand in place for the meeting.
And just so I do want to say, at the staff level, Tom, who did represent, is taking the topic to TPC. TPC is the supporting staff group to MPC. So just know that LTD, in direct response to that agenda item, will be taking it at the staff level, and that's all the players, the planning team that supports MPC. So it will be discussed there, and we're more than happy to provide an update as to how that topic is, either on a next month's department report or, time permitting, you know, maybe even a discussion. So we did follow up on that since Tom was the representative.
That's great. Thank you very much, AJ. Moving along, any other board member reports that people want to make note of? Okay, seeing none, let's go ahead and move on to the next item, which is our consent calendar. So I think everyone has had a chance to review that. If there are any questions, or I will entertain a motion.
Well, just with the acknowledgement of a welcome to Mary Ann to the SBC, I move to approve the consent calendar as it appears here.
Excellent. So Josh has moved.
Second.
Caitlin has seconded. Very good. And we'll do a roll call vote. So we'll start with Josh.
Aye.
Don Norton.
Aye.
Caitlin Vargas.
Aye.
And I, Carl Gay, also vote aye, which is important because it wouldn't have passed otherwise. So motion passes, consent calendar passes unanimously. Let's move on to the proposed board engagement policy, and that's on page 119 of your packet. Looks like Camille, would you like to introduce that into us?
Yes. So this agenda item was requested at the December board retreat, and we actually had it on the agenda for the March meeting, which ended up being canceled due to the COVID pandemic. So in December, the board had requested that staff draft a proposed public engagement policy for the board. So this is here just for the board to review and provide any feedback. If the board is comfortable with the policy as it has been written, then we will bring it back at the August meeting for adoption. If the board would like any revisions to be made, then we will make those revisions and bring it back in August for the review.
Thanks so much, Camille. Yeah, December 2019. It was a long time ago, it feels like, doesn't it? Did anyone want to have any comments about the policy on page 120? Or questions, comments? Otherwise, I have a comment, but yeah, go ahead, Josh.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it looks good. It looks like kind of what we talked about before, but I would want to make sure we have a chance to talk about it with the other three board members. That's all.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, because it is something that affects all of us, and it would be preferable, I agree, to have everyone on board. But just since I'm talking right now, like I read it over, I like it, it makes sense, and seems prudent that we act, that we have some rules and policies guiding how we interact with the public and communicate. Other comments? Don or Caitlin, just want to check in specifically. Cool. Yeah, I mean, I think I want to acknowledge, I think a lot of us were doing that. We just never had it in writing. So just putting it in writing is, I think, very helpful. Great. Well, that's good. That's a good start. And we're not voting on it today anyway. So when the others join us, we can do another in-depth review of it. And then perhaps we'll go ahead and approve it at that point. All right. Let me go back to the main agenda. And next we have service assumptions and implementation, and looks like Mark Johnson will be making that presentation to us. Mark, go ahead.
Okay, I think I'm on. So, yeah, I just want to cover with the board kind of an overview of our service, kind of where we are now, what we're anticipating for the short term, and then talk a little bit about long term. And so, some of Josh questions were around, well, what's our service model now, you know, as far as our, you know, productivity standards? Are we running more of a ridership model, or are we running more of a coverage model? In reality, we're running a ridership model. I mean, the service that we have is largely on our major transit corridors. You know, MX is running fairly frequently, as is the 11 and our course routes. The problem is we don't have a lot of frequency right now, and because of low ridership. And so, you know, as we move forward, we need to, you know, kind of think about how that should look. And, you know, certainly we're waiting right now to understand what schools are going to look like in the fall, what the U of O is going to look like in the fall, and how we can respond to that. One of the things we're having a discussion now is what to do with fall bid. We're actually looking at postponing fall bid until maybe late October, or you know, sometime in that time frame to get school going and really kind of see what the demand is and try to understand that a little better. So those are the discussions we're having right now for the kind of the short term look. And you know, again, it's really dependent on, you know, schools, U of O, and how quickly, you know, COVID-19 restrictions end, which doesn't seem like it's going to be too soon. So one of the things we are also doing is starting some public outreach. You'll see some things come out this week from Pat, you know, just talking about the steps we're taking to make sure the buses are clean and people get on them and feel safe, and, you know, promoting safety and sanitizing efforts and all of those kind of things. And we'll step that up in the fall as well as we're, school returns and we get, you know, more potential riders. So those are the kind of the short-term things we're looking at. More long-term, we really have to start looking again at, you know, transit tomorrow and have that board discussion about what the structure of our service should look like in the long run. And so next month, we'll bring that discussion back to you. And we hope to, you know, walk the board through that process to have a decision sometime this fall, maybe October. And because that really will dictate all the other decisions we make in terms of how we handle neighborhood services, what role does scooters or micromobility or mobility on demand and all those kind of things play into our service model. And, you know, how do they support that service model? And so those are the things that over the next few months we'll be working on and talking about. So that's, you know, the kind of, in a nutshell, you know, what we're expecting to do over the next few months to set us up for, you know, kind of a long-term strategy as far as, you know, a transportation system with that connects to transit really well and having alternative modes that actually, you know, make sense or affordable and promote ridership on our base system. So that's really all I wanted to share with you tonight, and to entertain any questions.
Thank you so much, Mark. That was a really good nutshell. I imagine there probably are some questions and comments that want to be made, so I'll throw it out there. I'll withhold mine until just give other people a chance. Just so everyone knows, Caitlin had to step away for just a little bit, but I think she said she'll just be back in just a moment. So checking with Don and Josh. Oh, I see Josh's hand up. Go ahead, Josh.
Thanks, Carl. Thank you, Mark. That's super helpful. I'm curious, do we have, I mean, I heard some flexibility in there, but do we have certain milestones or timeline, you know, sort of points in the timeline that we need to be thinking about? Like we need to, if we want to provide service at a particular level by a certain date, we need to make the decision by, you know, I don't know, a month in advance, 2 months in advance. Like, can you just give us a sense of, you know, decision points that you see coming? I mean, just even though it is a little flexible.
Yeah, and I think the goal is if we're going to have a major change in the structure of our system, then, you know, we're looking at implementation in fall of 2021. So, you know, so we do have some time, but, you know, the sooner the decisions are made, the sooner we can start putting the pieces together around it.
Anything else from you, Josh? Otherwise, I'll move on to Don.
Go ahead, Don, and then I'll have more. Go for it.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Don.
My question was about whether we have current connections with any of the bus benchmarking groups or comparing with other people the same thing, or is that just delayed? Does it take money more to get any information back?
So you're really a springy sounding, Don, but so I think your question was, are we using some of the benchmarking data from our benchmarking group to look at other property ridership? Is that correct?
Well, that's close. I was just wondering if any of this is current, or is this communication going on between the other members of the benchmarking groups?
So yes. Yes, weekly. I mean, so the benchmarking group they put out a weekly report on worldwide on all their benchmarking groups. So they've about, you know, what steps are being taken, what's ridership looking like. And so, we're in pretty steady contact with that, with the benchmarking groups and get pretty good information about what's happening in not only the United States, but in the rest of the world in terms of the transit services and how they're responding.
Any information coming back yet that seems pertinent? Anything that LTD can relate to?
Well, a lot of the things that we've been putting in place come out of, you know, either benchmarking group or APTA or somewhere. So, you know, we try to understand, you know, what's working in other places and how we apply it here in terms of, you know, our current status. But, you know, I'd say that's also in our long-term strategy, trying to understand, okay, you know, what's, you know, we're looking at, bus operator hours right now, in fact. And so I ran some reports yesterday trying to, you know, understand, okay, how do we stand up against others as far as bus operator productivity and, you know, some things that we can do to improve that. And so, so the answer is yes, we use that data and that information to apply it here, you know, when it makes sense.
Thank you,
Mark. Yep.
Great question, Don. I'm going to take a quick comment and question before Josh, and then we'll check in with Chris or Caitlin, rather. So, Mark, I kind of feel like we're still in, and I think you kind of indicate that in your report, that we're kind of in a crisis/emergency time period right now. And I'm wondering, like, when we move out of that, what kind of directions do you need from us with all these unknowns? Because so many things could change. Like Nuovo, for example, one of the largest users may have on campus, may have hybrid, may have nothing. How can we stay nimble and be directive with staff in these kinds of situations or in this situation?
And that's kind of what we're in the middle of now, trying to figure out what to do with fall bid, because we've got several scenarios that we put together, but there's not enough certainty right now to understand, you know, which one will work. And that's what we're talking about, saying, well, maybe we should just hold off on the fall bid and, you know, kind of wait and see what happens. And then, you know, once we have more information, we can respond, you know, to actual need rather than, you know, what we think is going to happen. So,
I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, do you need us to be more directive? Like, do you need us to work on engaging the public and coming up with and like working with SBC and giving you a like, hey, we need you to adopt this kind of model and do your best with it, or you see something else?
Yeah, I think during the crisis, I mean, you know, I don't know that would be helpful for staff. I mean, I think in the long term, those discussions need to take place in terms of, you know, what we want the future to look like and, you know, how we kind of rise out of this and bring ridership back. And those are all really going to be important discussions and maybe useful for direction, you know, when we're trying to, you know, build ridership back up.
Yeah. And then speaking of which, I was listening to NPR and Ray LaHood, the former transportation secretary, was talking, and he said that there was probably a lot of work that all transit agencies needed to work on, to do, to build confidence back in transit. And I think he's probably right. And that includes like, you know, strategies for cleaning, strategies for how, yeah, and a lot of things we are doing, like, you know, how people board, what safety precautions there are for operators as well as the public. I think we'll definitely, those are some of the obvious ones I think the board can be helpful in directing on. I'll give you a chance to respond before I move on to Josh or back to Josh.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And again, we're in contact with, you know, all of our partner agencies all over. In fact, Jake was just text me. You know, he was in a operations meeting with Washington Properties today, and kind of talking through, they're going through the same thing, trying to figure out what school's going to do, what should the fall look like, you know, and so, you know, we're staying as close contact as we can with our partner agencies and working together. And if anybody, you know, comes up with great ideas, we usually know about them, so.
That's great. And just, you know, for what it's worth, I think you're right. I think we're going to be kind of stuck in this adversity crisis mode for a lot longer than we probably anticipated. And so I think there's just, the only thing certain is more uncertainty, from my point of view.
Yeah.
Going to go around back to Josh, and then we'll see if Caitlin has anything, and then we'll go around one more time if there is anything more. Josh, go ahead.
Great, thank you. So a bunch of, I think, fairly little questions, but first of all, so U of O's fall term's first day is September 29th. If we were launching a new schedule, you know, quote unquote bid, if we were launching a new bus schedule at the beginning of that academic year, how far out does a decision on that need to be made, especially like general policy direction, Mark? I mean, can we be giving that advice in our August meeting?
I don't know what advice you would give us, to tell you the truth. I mean, you know, we're looking at that daily in terms of, you know, how we should, you know, what kind of service level we should provide to you know, get the most out of our buck, but also be conscious of the health implications. So, you know, there are constant discussions going on about that. So, but we need about 6 weeks, you know, at by the time, you know, we decide, yep, that's what we got to do and move on. That's why we're looking at moving it out, because we think, really, the service that we have is probably adequate for the start of school. I mean, if we need to add buses to MX, which will be the most likely scenario for, you know, loads, then we can do that pretty easily. And the 11 as well, so because they're, you know, just on frequent transit networks, so we can, you know, put extra buses on those if we need them to respond in the short term, until we can, you know, put the bid in place once we really understand what's happening. So, that's kind of what we're looking at. And we are pretty sure that, you know, things will be okay for the short term, just start a school and then we can respond accordingly.
Okay, that's helpful. And especially just 6 weeks as a sense of scale for lead time is helpful. Back to what advice we would give, I think there are elements of the scheduling and public health safety issue trade-off that are basically policy decisions. So right now, at the board level, we haven't really been given any sense of what the trade-offs would be. So it's actually difficult to give policy guidance. I'll give an example. Tom has really, you know, dutifully reported to us nearly every week ridership data, and we've been able to see how many, you know, the incidence of buses that are full to our sort of public health safety limit. But we have, you know, we've never gotten kind of a sense of, hey, we could cut these routes and beef up service on these other routes in order to reduce the times when buses are really full, or something like that. I'm only making that up because it's so central to the public health issue and might relate to what you were saying about U of O, because I think, you know, in a normal year, a lot of our fullest buses are basically on routes serving U of O. So that's why I was sort of focused on that part of the fall schedule. But I guess what I would like to see is, you know, a little bit more, and I know that there's probably no template for doing this, and so I feel bad asking, but I feel like it's our responsibility at the board level to say, like, hey, can you give us a sense of some of the trade-offs? Because maybe in order to serve certain routes well and safely, we will need to cut service in other places. So I don't know if there's an obvious response to that, but that's what I'm concerned about.
I mean, you nailed it on the head as far as trade-offs goes. I mean, you know, you add buses. Well, it's a discussion we've had all along. If you put buses one place, you can't put them another, right? And so, you know, we decide, well, you know, we're going to go hard and fast and allow no more than, you know, 20 people on a bus and, you know, live with it, then, you know, yeah, I mean, we'd have to really, really look at that and try to figure out how to accommodate it, which we are now. I mean, you know, if there's typical days and times where, you know, we're getting more than the allocated number, we'll add buses out there. So we've got trippers going out every day to cover where we know where we might, you know, have an overload. And so, you know, those are operational responses, really. And so, you know, we try to stay within our stated policy of 20 max on a 40-foot bus and 30 max on a 60-foot bus, and respond accordingly if we get beyond that. Now, you can, and if Tom shows his charts and graphs, I mean, usually there's only, you know, two or three trips a day, you know, out of, you know, hundreds of trips we're doing that actually hit that level. And those are kind of the random ones. The ones that we know are happening, we can respond to and you know, put extra buses during certain times to make sure it doesn't happen. So.
That's helpful. Thank you. Sorry. I have a couple more quick ones, but do you want to go to Kaylin?
Yeah, actually, you know what? Let's go ahead and finish it out. Go ahead and do your couple quick ones, and then I'll check in with Don and Kaylin, and then no problem, move on to the next slide.
Okay, thank you. Well, so very quickly, and I'll just batch these. I would love it if we could see what ABBG is producing in the name of benchmarking. I mean, I know we typically just get a kind of annual report, but if you guys want to forward on like one of those weekly things, that would be really helpful. Okay. I'm also curious to hear if there's any response to the BART occupancy heat map that I sent out. That seemed like we were, I mean, as I said in my email to the board, it seemed like we were already like producing a lot of the data for that. And maybe that would sort of be a way to educate riders on risk levels and allow them to sort of think about transit a little more in a more granular way. And third, you know, I'm actually puzzled about hearing that, Mark, that you think we are doing more of a ridership model, because it seems like we have more routes that have shifted to low frequency, like a bunch of them that are just on the hour, but I may not be counting that right. But that's, well, I've just noticed some of them have gone down in frequency. So, yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, they have, and that's the problem. I mean, but the ones that are on frequency are on MX and the 11 and the 66 and 67, you know, and so, you know, the problem is now there just isn't ridership or the frequency demand. So yeah, it doesn't have frequency, but if we look at our ridership, it's primarily on the frequent transit networks. So.
Yeah, if I can throw in a quick comment, I feel like that was my assessment too, Mark, is that most of our deployment is on those frequent transit networks. And while the overall ridership has shrunk, I think for those people who are still using, this is our frequent transit network or ridership model.
Well, that's where we have our 60-foot buses and, you know, that are getting, you know, occasional overloads like on the MX and on the 11. And, you know, so, yeah, those are the ones we would expect them to be.
And Josh, I think you had one more thing before I move on.
Oh, I'm just curious if I don't know, we just don't have Tom's report in today's agenda, or I would have asked it during that, but the BART heat map, occupancy heat map thing, I don't know, does that sound feasible?
It's just staff time. And so and right now we just don't really have staff time to jump into that kind of stuff. So that's kind of where that is.
Okay, that totally makes sense. I guess the thing I would ask board members, and I'll circle back when we're all assembled and ask this again, the thing I have said a number of times, you guys are, you know, have heard me, maybe getting sick of it, I don't want people to do stuff that's unsafe, but I also don't want people to view transit as more unsafe than it actually is. If we have a lot of buses that are at low occupancy, transit might be fairly safe. And if the thing that was captivating to me about those occupancy or whatever they call load, passenger load heat maps, I think, from BART, is that people could look at it and see that at many times a day, occupancy is generally really low. And so people could sort of change their behavior based on that. We might get a lot more ridership. We might serve more of our function and be doing something that's safe from a public health standpoint. So that's my point. I'd ask board members to take a look at that and see if we can think about that as part of what we communicate to the public on the public health issues. Thanks.
Josh, I couldn't open that.
Oh, well, I will try to resend it for you in a different form. Thank you, Don.
Okay.
Just checking in with Don and Caitlin, any comments from you two? And it's okay, if not, I will go ahead and move us on to the next item. Okay, hearing that. Mark, thank you very much for that report. I think obviously we're gonna have more conversations about this as things develop, but this is a really good way to kind of frame the question, so to speak. So thank you. Next, I believe we have Cosette for the Regional Transportation Options Transitions. If you're, Cosette, if you're there, go ahead, please go ahead. Actually, is Cosette here or is someone else doing it?
She is here. She may be having some technical difficulties.
No worries. Go ahead.
Let me just say, Camille, can you get Tom? I believe Tom worked with her on this. So I want to make sure that we capture the
spirit. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't want to do a high level and miss the key points that they talked about.
And if this takes a little time, I don't mind it. Oh, is Tom ready? I could move us on to Randy.
Tom's here. Yep.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Tom.
I'm here. So, and just to make sure people can hear me, right? No? Yes, okay, thank you.
Yes, Tom.
So what the memo provides is really, I think, some good history on the you know, what we used to call transportation demand management, called TO today. And it really outlines for you how the program and even the concept has evolved. Again, back in the late 80s, early 90s, there was not a lot of understanding of how these programs could work and on. We've really taken it a long ways, you know, getting it into the regional planning where everyone, you know, all the partners into the regional transportation plan approved the use of funding for these kinds of programs, and it's really taken off from there. And you can see we started with the group pass program and emergency ride home and park and ride, some of the traditional things, and it's really evolved into a whole lot more you know, different kinds of programs, looking at, for example, safe routes to school as an example, where you have a real opportunity to have younger children start to develop habits that don't involve getting dropped off at school like I did when I was growing up. So things have transitioned quite a bit since then. And so as we were looking at this program, and you know, we've been talking about updating the planning around it and everything, we thought it was an opportunity to explore, you know, how to deliver the suite of programs in a different way. And we've started that conversation with the staff level group of the MPO, the Transportation Planning Committee. In fact, today they that group approved the transition of Safe Routes to School program to LCOG, and that's kind of a first step. There's a lot of other things we're looking at this point in terms of the kind of reimagining how TO can happen. And it actually comes at a good time because at a couple different levels, we've been operating on a five-year plan for the point-to-point group. That plan has expired and we're about ready to renew that at the same time that the region is updating the regional transportation plan. So there's a lot of opportunities to, again, as I said, reimagine how we deliver this set of services at a regional level. In that context, while some of the programs might be transitioned elsewhere, we might figure out how to do them differently as a region. LTD would remain a strong voice in this area. I'm trying to see here what we're looking at. So if you looked in the memo, it leads you through kind of how our thought process was in terms of who we are, what we value, and how we deliver regional service. And so in that context, we looked at some of the things that we do that are maybe more connected to the core of our operations. And so things like van pooling are things that we feel we are probably the best to do. But there's other things where maybe there's like LCOG or other agencies that might be able to take on some of these things more effectively. And so the process we're going through gives us and the region an opportunity to look at the different roles that we're playing and how to really take this set of programs, but also new program development into the broader regional conversation. And I believe that's what I have to say. And I'm, I don't know if Cosette is back yet, but.
I'll take the opportunity to ask the board if they have questions for either you or Cosette or comments. Don or Caitlin or Josh?
Well, I'll just say that, well, I didn't say anything in the board report thing, but part of LCOG's consideration at the last meeting was the transportation demand management, which I guess now is being changed to transportation options. That wasn't in the memo before last month, but it is now. And they're taking on that role for Lane County. So it's just interesting. They applied for a grant, which the LCOG board had approved that application or get a, just to pursue this operation of the transportation options. So it's just kind of filling in from earlier reports that I didn't give.
So this is Cosette. I don't know if you can hear me. It looks like I'm Pat Walsh, but I'm actually Cosette sitting in Pat's chair. And Don, I think what you're talking to there, if it's okay if I speak to that, is the changing roles. So it's the changing roles of the programs. It's the changing roles of the of how we deliver those programs, and it's the changing roles of the agency partners. So this is an excellent time for us to take a step back and look at the programs that we're delivering them and how we're delivering them, and also look at what each of our agency's roles are. And if you look at the history of the point-to-point programs, LTD has taken on an ownership role of all of those programs. So we've either operated them or contracted to operate them. This is an opportunity for us to reevaluate that Safe Routes to School is a good example where LTD has been owning that program, and it doesn't necessarily make sense for LTD to continue to own it, but there is a good opportunity for us to be a partner in that. So while LTD continues to have interest in these programs, again, this is just a conversation with our partners to talk about ultimately who owns the programs and then what could the partnerships look like to support that.
Thanks, Cosette. Dawn, did you have a follow-up question, or did Caitlin or Josh want to join? I can't tell Josh's hand was raised from last time or if it's a new one.
No, this is a new one. Sorry, I've been trying to put it down
okay.
Reliably. I don't always.
Since your hand is quickly, up, go ahead.
Thank you. Tom and Cosette, I really appreciate this, and I appreciate this look, and I think you had heard from me in a previous meeting. I was a little, I was trying to channel the concern that we have heard from other stakeholders, like the U of O in the city, basically, that by just, you know, our budget cuts seems to come down, I think, from some people's perspective, disproportionately on, transportation options work. So I think this reassessment is great, and that's helpful. I think what is still hard, and I'm not asking to do this on the fly, but I think we need to kind of fumble toward this over time. What's really hard for me to do from the memo is to see what did we cut and then what is continuing and where are we going to work in new ways to do things that people need? Because I feel like, and I realize some of this is going to take resources and this is not a time when we feel like we have a ton of money, but this might be kind of a, under the category of transportation options, is going to be a bunch of things that are ways to lessen the public health burden on transit. They are ways to make total transportation expenditures less for households. So, at the time of a pandemic and a recession, I think this stuff is going to be extra necessary. And so it would be great if we could just have as a goal over the coming months to get a little bit clearer on, what we're going to do, because it feels pretty, feels fairly urgent to me. That's it. Thanks.
So Josh, this is Cosette, okay. And I would just say that as of right now, nothing has been dropped. So, these are still very important programs. Some of the programs don't have an immediate need. So if it's infrastructure or some of that, we can put those on hold, not eliminate them, put them on hold. And then other programs like Safe Routes to School, where we have a continued need, or van pools, where we still have a van pool operating, we're still continuing to support those programs. It's just a matter of what do they look like in the future and how do they move forward. And absolutely, these are important programs. LTD's has a stake in them. They're part of our complete trip. So we want to make sure that they continue, and we just want to have the conversations so that we can ensure that we're positioning the programs for the best success and hopefully continued evolution and expansion in the future.
Great, thank you.
Thanks. Look, Dawn, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to kind of follow up on what Josh had just said, and expand on what I was talking about earlier in the terms of the pilot program from Lane Act and the LCOG joining in with changing their focus on transportation options. That, yeah, I'm feeling this urgency as well, but I'm also seeing all this opportunity coalescing right now. It's kind of exciting to see that. I'm hoping we can join in that. And well, I know LTD's been in it all along, but this is a kind of expanding out to more of Lane County and getting more people involved in transportation options. So I'm happy to see this proceeding.
Thanks, Don. I would just back or to support you on what you just said, I was going to say something similar, which is I think this dovetails with some of the other planning that we need to do. So I think we should definitely incorporate this all into that future work session I mentioned. Sorry, Cosette or Tom, I didn't know if you wanted to respond back to anything Dawn had said before I check in with Caitlin.
You know, I guess I just would provide some information that we didn't cover in the initial comments, but the bulk of the funding for the transmission options programs in the region are through the MPO's federal sources, and ODOT provides funding as well. We've certainly been providing a substantial amount of funding in a lot of ways, but the programs, Safe Routes to School, things like that, are the funding is in place. In fact, MPC took action last month to continue the ongoing funding for the TO programs in the region. So I just wanted to convey that the funding is in place, and we're just figuring out now where each of these places can, these programs can best reside for success.
Thanks, Tom. Checking with you, Caitlin, anything you want to ask or say? Good deal. Okay. Well, Cosette and Tom, thank you very much for that report. I think we'll go ahead and move on to the next item, which is a Santa Clara Station construction update with if Randy's out. And Randy, just so you know, I'm going to let you get started, and I'm going to put Dawn in charge for just a moment. I'll be back in 1 minute, but I just want to get this rolling, and I'll be right back.
Well, I don't know what to do and be in charge. I'll just turn it over to Randy to do his presentation.
Oh yeah, that's what. Sorry, in case I didn't get back in time, Dawn. I just wanted you to be the moderator. But yeah, if Randy's ready to go, please go ahead.
Yep, I'm ready to go.
Thank you,
Camille. How am I able to share my screen? Camille, are you
there? There is no audio here.
Apologies, apparently I was double muted. Randy, there should be a button in the middle of your screen called share screen.
All I have is the raise hand option.
Okay. Give me just one moment and I will go ahead and pull it up.
Okay.
Bear with me just 1 second.
We received this presentation as part of our board package. I'm assuming it'll be familiar.
Correct.
And
I can go ahead and get started on the background. So this is Randy speaking, the project manager with facilities. And I'm just wanting to give you guys a update on the status of the construction at Santa Clara Transit Station and the Green Lane Corner Improvement Project. So as you guys are very well aware, in 2015, we purchased the 8-acre undeveloped lot for the construction of Santa Clara. We then moved forward with hiring Raw Brokaw Architects to complete the design services for this project. Just this past January, we went out for bid and the project was awarded to Delta Construction. And the construction of the Santa Clara Station actually began in May. Since May, the contractor has completed the excavation on the site, and which includes dumping a lot of rock for the subgrade and all the underground utilities for things like plumbing, electric, septic. And basically everything that you won't be able to see once the station is complete. Just recently, they've started working on items that we will be able to see when it's complete. So they poured the concrete slab for the driver relief building, and they started pouring concrete in different areas as well on the station. Camille, could you go to the next slide, please? So moving forward with construction, as you guys can see on this timeline here, we're anticipating the park and ride and the driver relief building will both be complete around the middle of November. Traffic signal work, which recently started, and the bus loop and the shelters are anticipated to be complete around the middle of December. Reconstruction of Green Lane is going to begin in August, and we anticipate that lasting about 3 months. This gives us a bit of wiggle room. Substantial completion is December 31st, so this construction timeline is assuming weather is going to be great and we won't have any mistakes. We know that's going to happen, so this will probably get extended a little bit, but we have a good cushion here to hit the substantial completion date of December 31st. Drivers are going to start training in the site in early November, and that'll last through early January. And then we are still very on track for the station to open for revenue service on February 7th, 2021. Next slide, please. So something that we are very fortunate to have right now is that the architect is able to go out on site and take photos with their drone. So this is kind of a side-by-side shot. The photo in the lower right-hand corner is what you guys were all able to see when you did the virtual reality back at the board retreat. And the photo on the left is the drone photo. So it kind of gives you an idea of what it's going to look like when it's complete. I don't have the mouse to move around, but on the far right of the drone photo, you can see the gravel base for Elementary Lane and then the gravel base for the park and ride. And then more to the left there, you can see a circular bus loop. And then those H or I looking things are the foundations for the bus shelters. And then kind of in the middle of the photo, you can see where the driver relief building is starting to go up. So these photos are a few weeks old, so we have quite a bit more improvements since then. But you can also see in the drone shot that the hair salon has been demoed. That was actually demoed back in June. So this is looking from the south side of the station looking north. Next slide, please. So here is the opposite view. So here we're on the north side of the station looking south. And again, it's a decently side-by-side comparison of the drone photo versus a virtual reality rendering that the architect had created before construction began. So here we can see the bus loop as well as the footprint of the driver relief building. You can't see in this drone photo anything of the park and ride though. And you can also, again, in the top right corner of the drone photo, you can see that the hair salon has been removed. Next slide, please. This photo was taken a couple weeks back as Delta was preparing to pour the concrete slab for the driver relief building. So the guys are there setting up the wooden forms. And they were also finishing installing the conduit into and out of the driver relief building. Next slide, please. This photo was taken last Tuesday, right after they finished pouring the concrete slab for the driver relief building. Next slide, please. So as a reminder, the pie chart on the left is the funding sources for this project. So the project budget is $10.3 million. And on the chart on the right, the middle column is the original budget, what we had anticipated for the project. And in the column on the right is the anticipated cost to complete. So the bid for the actual construction was a little under budget, which was good for us. And you'll also notice that direct costs are actually quite a bit higher than what we had originally budgeted. And that's because we chose to purchase several items directly versus having the contractor purchase some of those items. Long story short, we are still quite a bit under budget and we're still hitting our marks for the time frame to complete this project. Next slide, please.
So Randy, I don't know if it's okay to answer a question. I guess I didn't understand that one point with us making purchase of certain, I assume, types of materials. Why was that more expensive than letting the the contractor purchase it?
So there were a couple items like what we're calling the dynamic displays. So those are the screens that are going to be at each bay. We didn't have the specific product we wanted picked out yet, so we didn't include it in the bid. So the contractor was not responsible to purchase that. So we are, LTD is purchasing them directly from the vendor.
Oh, I see.
Yep.
Thank you.
So for the Green Lane Corner improvement, I had a little typo on here. I apologize. It should not say tenant relocation. This is the overall budget. So the original budget for this project was $750,000, and the anticipated cost to complete is almost $640,000. The big driver with this one coming in a lot under budget is the tenant relocation. If you guys remember our conversation several months back, when we had first hired Universal Field Services, we didn't fully know what to expect with tenant relocation. We budgeted high-end costs, and we came in quite a bit under budget there. We had $500,000 budgeted, which included the purchase of the property, and we are thinking it's only going to be $381,000. With the tenants, there were 8 tenants that we had to relocate. 7 of them have been fully relocated. Their files are closed out, and they're complete. We have 1 tenant still to relocate. She's moved out of the building, obviously, but COVID shut down all the hair salons, and she wasn't able to sign a lease for one, so I'm still working through those. Next slide, please. So this corner property, as I had mentioned, the hair salon was removed in June. Excavation on this site will begin in August, and it will be completed in line with the larger Santa Clara project by the end of this year. Next slide. And this is just another visual. This was just a couple days after the hair salon had been removed, to show you how nice it looks now. I also wanted to inform you guys that we have been actively talking to a lot of the neighbors and the businesses in the area, keeping them informed on the status of construction and the impacts that it'll have to them, most specifically the car wash, the fire department, and there's a neighbor also on Green Lane that will be impacted by this. They're very appreciative and have a lot of positive feedback for the communication that we've been having with them. Guess that's about all I have. Do you guys have any questions?
Randy, thank you so much for that update. You know, it's one of those things where we've been, as a board, have been talking about this project for so much and so long. It's nice to be able to actually put what we've been discussing. And with the board, looks like Don, you have a question, and then we'll move around. Go ahead, Don.
Well, I was just wondering, as part of the Connect Oregon grant, there was a requirement that some city component be installed because it was a construction over $1 million. Do you know what part of that is budgeted and how that's going to be used?
Sorry, I didn't catch the beginning, Don. It was breaking up a little bit.
Well, I don't know how these things work. It was a question on the Connect Oregon grant. Because it was over $1 million, it required a solar energy collection to be used on the site. And I'm wondering what component is being used there or how that's budgeted.
That is not something required for the Santa Clara project. I'm not sure if maybe Connect Oregon required that for a different project with LTD.
No, that was something long ago. That was part of the discussion even before we purchased that property. Well, not before, because I wasn't involved before, but so there's nothing in the budget about it?
AJ, is that a question you might be able to answer, or do you maybe need to look into it and get back to us?
I can look at that, look it up and get it back. I think it said Connect Oregon. I believe that money was actually SBDG funds, and SBDG funds originally, if I recall correctly, we had CMAC dollars programmed in. But what happened is, Don, we had to swap dollars out because the portion of the project being funded was part of the traffic signal. And that traffic signal had problems getting, although we were awarded regionally for that, those dollars, the state didn't really approve that. So we actually had to swap those dollars out. So maybe that's what he's talking about, the requirements. But those dollars were swapped out at the regional level. So we didn't, so the original dollars were swapped out, Don. So I believe that's why we didn't have that requirement on this project. And the portion of the project that's funded is the traffic signal, not the actual station itself.
The requirement was associated with the grant itself. And it was just, you know, that was a statewide thing that any of the construction on these kinds of projects, if they exceeded $1 million, and this one was $3 million, that there would be some solar energy component. But, you know, I can't follow.
I can check on that.
Goes on.
I can check on that. Randy, we'll follow up on that. You and I can talk and we'll follow up on that and send something in writing.
Yep.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Does that work for you, Don?
Thank you. Didn't want to drop it off the right.
Awesome. It's a good question. We'll run that. It sounds like AJ and her staff will run that down and get back to us. Josh, I think your hand is up for this one. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. And good job, Don, staying on that. I had forgotten about that, but I know that there are a bunch of, for infrastructure projects above a couple of different thresholds in Oregon, there's the, like this, whatever it's called, the green energy technology requirement. So thank you for that. I was just going to ask, and I apologize for not thinking of this before, because Randy, this looks amazing. You're like on time and under budget, and it looks fantastic. Seeing that progress with all the chaos going on out there is spectacular. But I am curious, are we equipping this station for electric bus charging, or are we even if we aren't putting in chargers, are we like running extra conduit or something like that? I realize if someone asked me, I wouldn't know what to say.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. We are. Gosh, when was it? Last fall, I think it was. We actually met with EWEB to discuss, you know, what that would look like at this station. And we sized the transformer to allow us that capability in the future. So in the bus loop, on both the north and the south side of the bus loop, there's pullouts, not at the bays. And we are running conduit to either of those pullouts. So if we wanted to install some type of charging infrastructure in the future, there's two different areas where we can.
Great, that is fantastic. Thank you, because I know people will be asking, and I know in a lot of places sometimes there isn't a requirement for charging being installed, but there's a requirement to run conduit so you can put it in later at low cost. So that story and sizing the substation or transformer is fantastic. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Yeah, that is fantastic. That was a great clarification question there, Josh. Caitlin, checking in with you. Anything you want to ask or say?
No, but thank you for all of that, Randy. That was really comprehensive. Sorry about that in the background. And that looks great. I love those drone photos. Thanks for sharing those.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, great. Thank you again, Randy. That was great. And we look forward to its completion and possibly not reporting its completion in the future. So thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's move on to speaking of electric buses, grant status with AJ.
Yes. So this is item that I wanted to bring back because at last month's meeting, Mark Johnson provided a presentation and Kelly as well spoke about the board's sustainability commitment that we've recently made. And with so much changing And I believe Mark mentioned the fact that we did not get awarded the most recent competitive award from FTA for 5 electric buses, which was our application. We still have another application in for the bus and bus facility, and the request is the same for 5 electric buses. So we're still hopeful that we will get some money out of that. But even without those 2 grants, our goal has been to meet the board's requirement. During the ad hoc sustainability committee, we engaged the board about making a commitment that really had a financial commitment. And I know the Vice President Kate Reed championed that as she's been on the board for a while and knows that just like you make project decisions at the policy level, the budgeting is another one. So when the board did make that commitment in June, it was with the understanding that we do have the financial means to meet that 25 bus all electric commitment. Now, that's not the way we want to do it with all of LTD's limited resources, but we do have the grant resources to meet that 25 all electric. So I just wanted to make sure that the board was certain that we could meet that commitment. Now, we will continue to go year after year and opportunity after opportunity, both at the state level and at the federal level, to seek funding to use competitive dollars instead of LTD dollars. So I just wanted to make sure, I think there was some confusion since we did just make that commitment and it's just so early on, we don't want to get off track to not understand that. So it's just a clarifying item. It doesn't require any action, but definitely I would like to know if the board had any questions or how I can assist on this matter.
Yes, thank you very much for the update, AJ. I think maybe a few people were just worried that this was more impactful or would change our ability to purchase these buses.
Correct. And I will say...
Any questions for AJ on this? Oh, go ahead, AJ.
No, it's okay. I would like to add, so busy in actually talking about it that it almost slipped my mind. We recently did submit for a regional grant here through, I believe it was CMAC dollars, and Tom will probably text me if I'm wrong, but it was CMAC dollars. And we did get awarded money for 2 electric buses. And we are also looking at other dollars that may be available. So in the short term, there may be an opportunity for us to have as much as funding for 4 additional electric buses. We currently have a procurement for 11, and we may have money at hand for more. So to meet that 25 bus limit in the 3-year period, our funding would only be needed for 10 buses. So that's the next project that we'll be working on. And again, we would hope that 5 of those buses would be in this next bus and bus facility grant. So we'll keep our fingers crossed on that.
Thanks, AJ. Any questions or comments from the board? Josh, I think your hand is up. Go ahead. And then Don, you'll follow.
Thank you. Thank you, AJ. That's super helpful clarification. I appreciate this memo because I had brought this up to get this on the agenda. A couple of things that I'm hoping we can do longer term. This is not pressing in the moment, but certainly by the next time that STIF funding comes around or, you know, certainly by the time we have another next fiscal year's budget, I think it would be helpful for us at the board level to see some sort of best guess schedule for procurement through like 2030 or 2035, because that's basically the way we had talked about it at the sustainability committee. We basically said, you and Mark had said, look, we believe we can, with sort of minimal pain, with, you know, given the regularity of FTA funding for, you know, helping people buy buses, we believe that we can achieve X by date Y. And so I think it would be helpful to have something like that eventually. This qualitative update is fine, but it doesn't sort of answer those longer term questions, because then we sort of hear news and sort of out of context. So that's the main request I would have longer term. In the short term, I guess I just want to get, or right now, so just a little bit of clarification. The money that we got from FTA for the 11 buses that we approved at the contract committee back in March, whatever, long ago, in the before times, that money was originally awarded to LTD in like 2017 or something, right? A long time ago. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I guess I'm wondering if the FTA refused our last one because they looked at that and they were like, we gave you money in 2017 and you still haven't spent it, because that would, the time frames of those low-no grants would have overlapped. Is that possible, that that's what was going on?
That's always a potential. These decisions are made at the federal level. They have both administrative considerations and political considerations. So you never know which one is the last determining factor. But what we do know is that we have maintained a good open communication with the FTA regarding the delay. And if you all may recall, that BYD buses put us 3 years behind schedule. That procurement actually happened before I was hired. So the BYD procurement was one of the major delays in both the delivery of the buses and then once we received them, the challenges we had. And, I think we did all the right things as an agency, and I know the board really wanted us to keep those buses. But ultimately, BYD was unsuccessful in being able to provide us buses that met our minimum standards. So that delay could be a reason. But again, awards are both political and administrative. And what we do is we just keep going along. And we recently hired Tiffany Edwards. And so there are going to be a lot of us more doing the heavy lifting on the political end to ensure that those factors are minimized.
Great, thanks.
I think Don.
Yes. I just wanted to follow up on that. The schedule for deliveries are having been delivered. Is that still like November? Is there anything new about what that is? Or we just have a regular schedule in that? I guess that's a question for AJ.
Because of COVID-19, the delivery schedule is delayed by a few months, but we are still expecting all 11 buses to be delivered in the winter period. So it likely will be December, but it could be, I'm sorry, be November, but it could be December or January. But they know that the delivery of those buses is very important. And IMLAC has a meeting with Flyer, and I believe either his meeting was today, it will be tomorrow. I spoke to him today and I just don't remember, but it was within the next couple of days to get an update. So keeping meetings regularly helps them know that we are serious about getting our buses as soon as possible.
Great. That's a good question, Don. Thanks. Really quickly, any other questions before or comments? Okay. Well, AJ, thank you very much for that grant update. We'll go ahead and move on to the next item, which is the employee climate survey. Mark, ready to give us a presentation on this?
Yeah. All right. So as part of AJ's goals for this year was to do an employee climate survey. And so it was done through HR, and it was anonymous survey there was 20 questions that had to do with their work life at LTD, employees' work life. And it was done through both SurveyMonkey and also hard copy. They could fill a hard copy of frontline employees and turn that in, and it was all entered in. So, you know, it was anonymous, and actually there was about 146, 147, I think, actually respondents, and which is pretty good for a internal survey. You know, it was right around 45% of employees responded. And overall, it was, it was 20 questions, and overall, it was probably 60% positive, about 15 to 20% kind of neutral responses, and some 15 to 20%, what we consider negative responses. But, overall, we thought it was helpful. There's certainly some areas that, we'd look at and go, okay, yeah, those are some areas that we can pay some attention to, do a little work around, do a little digging to understand, if there's specific work groups feeling certain ways, or if there's others, because bus operators, they're working in a very different environment than in some of the administrative staff. So, trying to understand, the different groups, different work groups and the different challenges that they have, and is kind of our next step in this process, and trying to understand if there's certain work groups that respond in differently to some of the questions than the others. You had the survey and kind of our synopsis of it, and so I just wanted to kind of walk through it quickly with you, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Yeah, that's great, Mark. Really, I guess really quickly, anyone have preliminary questions before we let Mark go ahead and walk us through? I think you're clear to go.
Yeah, I think we'll intend to do this yearly. I think it's a good baseline now, and this was done right before the COVID-19. So I think it was done on March 9th, I believe. And so, they were turned in March 9th at the latest. So we'd do it again next spring and see what it looks like.
Oh, did you want us to walk? Were you going to walk through any specific questions or maybe parts of the survey?
No, unless there was questions.
I'm sorry.
Related to them, yeah.
Well, I thought I heard that's what you said you were going to do. Okay. Oh, yeah. No. Well, we can read it too. Were there any specific questions that people had or comments they wanted to make about what was in the survey? I see Josh's hands. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, not really a question, just a comment. Thank you guys for doing this. I think it's incredibly important. And this is what we need to do our job as board members, just in terms of AJ's annual review and having, real data for it. So thank you for getting this done. I know things have been crazy. So thank you.
Do we lose you, Josh?
Oh, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yep, we heard you.
Is it just me, or is there?
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm done.
Yeah, sorry. Did I get disconnected? Because I'm losing people. Oh, no, I think I got, I hope people could have heard me too. I think I got might have got disconnected for a moment. I didn't quite catch all of that, Josh, but it sounds like you were complimentary of the survey. And I wanted to say something similar, which is that, yeah, I'm glad the survey was done, and it looks like a lot of the responses were positive, and I do agree there are a few things that I think we could use to work on, and I trust AJ to direct that too. So any other quick, or that doesn't have to be quick, any other comments or questions? Okay, thank you very much, Mark.
Welcome.
All right, I clicked out of the meeting agenda. Let me get back to the next one. So we are Oh, we're written reports. So this one, in this section, if there are any questions about the report that is in the packet, this is the time to ask those. Any questions from the board?
I don't have questions about the reports, but I guess I am wondering, just following on the last item and thinking about things that we have on our agenda as a board, Carl, what is the progress? What progress has been made in scheduling AJ's review? Any additional sessions that we have to, you know, meet for as a board? What's the story there?
Sorry, I was muted. Well, the timeline is going to be with probably some preliminary work that we will do at the next board meeting. I think that's all I have for it right now. And so we did get delayed a little bit because of COVID, but I think we're on track for resuming starting in August.
Okay, I would just say, and I'm curious to hear other people pipe up on this, but I know, you know, we're missing 3/7 of our board right now.
Right.
But you know, we're pretty overdue, and we are. I mean, I don't think it's fair to AJ or to us as a board if we go on with this much longer. So if we need to meet between now and our next board meeting too, I'm certainly happy to do so, just so we can, you know, do our best to get, you know, not fall further behind. That's all.
No, I don't. I think I appreciate that. I think there are a lot of factors that I'm having to balance right now, and so I think hopefully you'll understand, and I think other board members understand that there's good reasons for the delay, and so in addition to COVID. So, but yeah, rest assured, it will be done.
Great, thank you.
But yeah, along a similar vein, any other questions or comments about the written reports, including the financial report?
I just want to point out, there are no questions, but if there are, I want to make sure that I point something out. I know the board,
sure.
Under the financial report, Christina is providing the preliminary June 2020 financial report. The reason she is providing kind of just a briefing like that is because that is an area that we're required by Oregon statute to actually provide that preliminary. As you can tell, on July 15th, we don't know all the details. We normally come back sometime in August and give you what it's looking like more closely. And then after the auditors are done in December, we typically come back in January or February based on how busy the January meeting is packed, and we give you the audited numbers. But because some public agencies do not report monthly or quarterly to their governing bodies, there is something written in the statute that at a minimum we must report 30 days within. So I just want to say that although there's nothing significant to report, and there would be more questions that there are answers, we are required to do that annually. So just want to make sure that you know that, just because it's a requirement, and the board should know that we do this every single year. So, and I don't think there's ever really a lot of questions, but I think the record just wants to reflect that LTD is compliant.
Thank you for that, AJ. Well, we actually got through the meeting faster, much faster than I expected. I think possibly because when we have fewer people asking questions and making comments, it goes a little faster. But I just want to make sure for the good of the order. I didn't skip any meeting agenda items, right? Let me make sure.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So, all right. I mean, anything anyone wants to say for the good of the order? Don, go ahead.
Well, we have this report on the Global Warming Commission. I'd like to hear a little elaboration on that.
Yeah,
AJ,
sure.
Do you have something there?
I do. So yes. So last month I reported that I was appointed by the governor to that role. We have not held our first meeting. I have my first meeting not next week, the week after that. So within 2 weeks will be my first meeting. And in reviewing some of their notes, I wanted to point out that it looks like the upcoming topics are the role of natural gas. Definitely, natural gas is still a fossil fuel, and it's used, and a lot of people have different opinions about it. So it will be very interesting to me to see what at the state level, what that conversation is on infrastructure and its usage, and how I can inform that committee about kind of the research that we've done. I know that we've talked a lot about that here. I also have experience working with LA Metro, which was the largest natural gas agency. They ran their entire fleet natural gas for many years. There's pros and cons on that, but definitely my role there is much more from the environmental perspective. So I want to make sure that although I bring to the table some operational experience, that I make sure that I meet the requirements of my position. And they're also talking about hydrogen study approach and outline. And again, that's another area that we've really have for larger vehicles. LTD's really been involved with our partner agencies nationwide about the use of hydrogen fuel. So, and even with EWIP. So I'm excited to see what all the different players bring to the table and how that conversation is evolving at the state level. And I'd be more than happy every time I have a meeting to provide a department report about the specifics. And then if the board has more questions, that I provide updates. I think it's interesting thing happening at the state level on this topic.
Thanks, AJ. Anybody else with a, oh, Don, did you have a follow-up or did you have another question?
Well, I noticed at the bottom of that report, there was a request for, a citizens advisories committee developing. Can we get people from Wayne County involved somehow? I don't know whether the voice goes through here.
Yeah, no, it does, Don. I'm not sure if you're reporting to the commission itself, because I believe that's what it is about. But the meetings are public. So I will say, if you have an interest, I'd be more than happy to always send the board the schedule and then the public link to the meetings in case any board members would like to attend or anybody has interest in attending. As public meetings, of course, they're always available to anyone.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Checking in with everyone else. I mean, if there are no other questions or comments for today, I will go ahead and adjourn the meeting. But just one more go around. Caitlin, just check. And Josh?
I'm good.
Great. Well, Don, just making sure, Don, because you're...
Well, I just... Okay.
You look like you want to say something. Yeah, go ahead.
We're not getting anything on the origin and destination report, because I did have a couple of questions on that one, but I don't know. I take it that's a pretty long report to deal with.
I could make that up. Maybe AJ heard it all.
I did. He's asking about the origin and destination report. It's not on today's agenda. Tom, do you know when that report will be available for a presentation?
The report's complete, and we would be happy to come back to the board when there's room on the agenda.
So one of the things we can do in the interest of time, we can... I think he's breaking up. Don, you're breaking up a little bit. But what we can do, Don, is we can attach it to the next board agenda, put it on the department report and pull it out. Or if we, you know, again, Carl, based on, we could maybe swap out other projects if the other board members feel that that's something they would like more time to discuss.
Well, there's just one item in that report that it could maybe be fleshed out before it's presented, is that there's an item in, well, on the survey questionnaire.
Yeah. Sorry, Donna, it could be on my side, but I can't make out.
Something who, oh, I don't know. Maybe I had my hand on the mic.
Sometimes you shut down your video. You hear me that now? Might help. It might just be a bandwidth issue.
Anyhow,
if you shut down your video.
I have a question about the other. Because I was wondering if the people getting to the bus and back home from the bus are using skateboards, or is there something else that, because in that questionnaire there was a blank, it said other and then fill in. And I would guess there's only, you know, 40-50 responses in that blank, and it'd be interesting to see what other represents in there. That was basically a question I had about what I saw in the written report I got.
We can look that up.
Yeah, I'll follow up with Brett, who managed the project. So
okay, thank you, Tom.
Maybe this would be good for us to include, like AJ said, like as part of a report, we can always pull it out if we have time.
Agenda
item. Yeah.
Other board members may have an interest, so we'll make sure that it's in the department. Right. All board members or members of the public who heard the question today would be able to access the response. So I will include that.
I think that's a great idea. Well, great. Well, thank you very much to all board members for being present, and also members of the public who are attending in attendance today, as well as LTD staff. I hope everyone has a great summer day, and I look forward to seeing most of you or all of you next week at our special meeting. So please stay safe and have a great day. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.